From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of July, 2024. It's USDA Report Time. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll discuss this morning's report and the trade reaction with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll also take up the weather forecast, not only for the United States, but across the planet. We'll do that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull, and I'll update you on some of the agricultural news and information for the day as well. And if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program, including our panelists today, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, from Risk Management Commodity Sherman Newlin, and Greg Johnson from TGM Total Grain Marketing. If not, you can always hear it on many of these radio stations over the weekend, or you can listen to it now or shortly up on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Summarizing the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture today, ending stocks for corn, old crop at 1.87 billion bushels, new crop 2.09. Cash price for the coming growing season, the one we're in now, at $4.30. For soybeans, the season's average cash price at $11.10 for that crop that's in the ground. The old crop ending stocks at 345 million bushels, new crop at 435. Ending stocks for wheat for the old crop at 702, new crop at 856. A big increase there, $5.70, the season's average cash price for new crop in Chicago. That translated into numbers that were like this for the corn, a penny to 4 cents higher for the soybeans, down 12 cents in the nearby contract, and down 2.5 in the deferred November. Wheat futures were the big loser. They were down 20.5 in the September today, and in the March, down 17.25 cents. That all on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss how the trade reacted to this morning's USDA report and what the numbers look like in Chicago as the day ended. Hi, Mike. It's been a busy Friday. I know you've been busy as well. Let's start with how the trade reacted to begin with and what the numbers did just off the bat as the USDA report was released, and if things changed throughout the day.
I would say, Todd, the major takeaway from the numbers and the market reaction was that we had a couple big curveballs thrown at us again today. For me personally, I was expecting a lot more activity in terms of USDA number changes in the world-ending stocks of corn to help support the corn market, and not as much in the domestic. And the USDA did the exact opposite. They didn't change Brazil's corn or beans at all. They did take down Argentina's corn and Argentina's beans a little bit, but not much. And they really changed the domestic side of the equation substantially for the corn. And they did the same thing in the wheat market as well. And so the net takeaway of the trade and the price action was supportive for the corn, because U.S. ending stocks are still not over 2.1 billion bushels for 24-25 after today's numbers. I actually thought that they could be moving towards 2.3, 2.4 if they wanted to, because of the acreage and rainfall that we've seen. They chose to back away from that primarily by old crop changes and old crop reductions, as well as export and feed and residual increases this year. So we came in under 2.1 billion. That supported the corn, but the corn was kept on a leash by a bearish wheat report, and it was substantially bearish with almost a 100 million bushel increase in new crop ending stocks to 856 million. That blew past the highest trade newswire estimate. And as a result of that, July wheat in the soft red that went off the board today closed out at 538 before settlements. That was our low from June 26th. And so we essentially went right back down to where we got done pulling ourselves off the bottom from the acreage and stocks report. And keep in mind, last month, the USDA gave us a 50-cent increase in average U.S. wheat price. That took us to 650. The market, however, in July futures went from an opening on report day of June 12th, 626, down to, you guessed it, 538. So we went right back down to where we were, and we did not rally last month in the bullish wheat report. Are we going to call this a double bottom now that harvest is over and maybe we factored a lot of this in?
I have to ask, do you want, I know you want to call it a double bottom. Do you think it is?
I think it is if the U.S. dollar continues with the inflation data that we got this week, both consumer prices and producer prices, making a new monthly low. If it can take out the May low and the June low, which are right next to each other, that should stimulate further selling in the dollar. That, I think, does bring in to the idea that we will pick up in exports. And the reason I say that is because the United States crop grew in wheat by 3.6 million metric tons. The major exporters only grew a million metric tons. And so it's shaping up like this in wheat and corn. We have the supply, but we also have the very strong currency. The rest of the world is not seeing as much supply. So we are being put into a good position if we can get the demand and the export market starting to move.
Just to double back through some of the numbers for wheat, production up 133 million bushels month over month. Ending stocks were up 98 million bushels. That, by the way, is not, well, it's a bit more than a 10% increase, but it's not the full increase that we might have had from just the production itself. They did increase exports by 25 million and a couple of other things. So they ended up with a 35 million bushel increase in usage. And the big number on the bottom end of that was that there was an 80 cent change month over month in the season's average cash price. It dropped from $6.50 to $5.70. That's a huge decrease in 1 month. I don't actually recall anything of that size ever before.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because 2 months combined, we've had a swing of $1.30. I mean, we've gone from $6 to $6.50 to $5.70. And I can't remember a time when we've had a $1.30 swing in 2 months. And I think the other thing that I would bring up is we knew the yield was probably going to go higher because of the anecdotal evidence from Illinois to Kansas. We knew the acreage was tight at 47.2 million planted, but they really torqued up the harvested acres this year compared to the last couple three in terms of percentages. And I think that added even more to the production to get us over 2 billion. And so that's why I'm a little bit tepid given the 570 cash price that we have now in today's report. We should be there with September futures at 569, July 25 at 612. You split those two in between and take a 60-cent basis, you're, you know, well below 540, 530 in terms of an average cash price, 5.25 maybe even. So I feel like we should be there. And I think that the export market that the USDA gave us in both corn and wheat, we saw increases today. And I agree with that. If we see that dollar break,
how does the wheat market play into the corn market going forward?
Yeah, we've got a wheat corn spread that's trading just under 140, around 135 area. We don't want it to slip below 120, 115. That tends to open up the downside in favor of wheat becoming a feed grain. There's a danger of that. I don't think it's as big a danger as it was 2 or 3 years ago, though, Todd, because we do have some drought issues in the Black Sea that we still have to contend with. And I still think that we've got some supply issues coming off the wheat in Europe and the Black Sea areas as well. But it's something to certainly watch because the drought for the corn in Ukraine and key parts of Russia for feed grains is pretty significant right now. And I think that's where I could see a period now after this week where corn does lead the wheat market in terms of upside and the wheat kind of fights it unless we start to pick up some real export demand. So I'm really watching the Middle East closely at this point, because if we start to get some tenders out of Algeria and Jordan and places like that, I think the trade might start to pick up on that. We had a really nasty weekly export sales week again, pretty much across the board.
Why is it, do you think, that the trade has not picked up on the corn being in trouble in the Black Sea area as it relates to production?
I would put most of that at the feet of not knowing what the South American crop is and the extreme differential between CONAB and USDA. And we're going to go through this another month, and it is just really getting frustrating. And the only thing you can do is look at the Paranagua price, as far as I'm concerned, because that's going to tell you whether they're tight or not and whether USDA's right or whether CONAB's right, because they should be with roughly 70%+ harvested of second crop corn and moving very quickly. Yield's not the greatest from what I'm hearing as they get into it deeper. We should start to see that in the price action.
But we've not seen it yet.
That's right. We're still the cheapest in the world. We're actually on an FOB basis, I think, underneath Ukraine by $1 a ton right now. So we are the cheapest in the world on an FOB basis, but we haven't seen a tick up or a change in trend to the upside in either Argentina upriver or Paranagua for Brazil.
Hold on, and what's that telling you? That's telling you either that they don't know and they're not pricing in a smaller corn crop there, or it's not a smaller corn crop. They're not pricing in a corn crop that is the size USDA has it.
This is where I think what we're dealing with is a larger soybean crop, and so we've been delayed in switching over to corn. They're now moving in the corn, and they're not doing as much beans, but the data still shows in June and July, some of the private data that I've seen would suggest that if China, for instance, takes in 13 million tons of beans in the month of July, which could be a record if they go over that, about 70-80% of that could be Brazil, and then the rest be Argentina and Uruguay, and we get essentially next to nothing. So I think the port's still very busy in soybeans, and that's maybe backed up the corn. The corn supply's there, but is it there as much as, you know, to get them through the next 3-4 months of shipping out? And that's why I say that's, I think, a critical feature now with this distinction between the CONAB and USDA figures.
We've not talked about the soybean numbers yet. They dropped cash price by a dime to $11.10. Ending stocks of 435 million bushels. What'd you think of them?
I still think beans are a follower. You know, to be at a 435 million bushel carryover domestically, almost a 128 million metric ton globally, and that being on the top end of the trade estimates, 129.9 was the top end number. I still think beans are going to have to need the wheat and the corn to go higher. It's easier for me to see the soybeans drop substantially percentage-wise than the corn at this point because of the supply demand both domestically and globally.
Do you think that the market has built itself as bearish a picture as possible?
When it comes to the corn, I think yes, and I think the funds would be, you know, they're probably dancing on a record net short position again because they were very close to the number one spot last week. And I think all I've heard in Chicago is how great our corn crop is here in the United States. And it is right now. But if we turn off hot and dry and this hot weather doesn't dissipate after the end of the weekend and the Western Corn Belt starts to get hot and dry, there's a lot of variability in this corn crop this year. So between the global and the U.S. and the uncertainty in South America, I think we should be there and then some when it comes to the corn market.
Lastly, how's the crop look in your area this week?
It looks really great. I mean, I talked to two clients that had some damage, small damage from flooding, but they said the high ground with the 6 or 7 tenths of inch of rain we got this week, pretty widespread. They're still looking at top end yields right now.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like online on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. On this Friday, let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thank you for being with us today. I want to get right into this. Can you recap for me, and this is a big one, what happened with Hurricane Beryl across the growing regions of the United States?
You know, do this with me. Let's start just a hair earlier. I want to talk about where Beryl came from, right? It was in the open Atlantic, moved across parts of like the Lesser Antilles, went south of Jamaica, hit the Yucatan, then hit Texas, and has finished in the Northeast. It actually finished in Quebec. Now, why am I bringing all that up? This hurricane had characteristics that I would say are more typical of September than now. And as it went rolling into Texas, dropping, boy, at one point, I think we're up to 3 million people without power in and around Houston. We watched the moisture move into Arkansas. It hit Missouri, hit Illinois, nice, steady, long duration rain. And then it finished in northern Indiana, Michigan, and went off to Canada. And the reality is that just snaked through one of the most dry parts of the Corn Belt. I mean, Todd, I don't know about you, but I came home from vacation and my yard, well, I mean, I could play basketball and it was so hard. Bounce a ball, I mean, it was just no give to it. And now it's pretty amazing the moisture that came through this area. And remember, it was even followed by another storm, couple of days of stormy weather. And yesterday, sorry to keep rambling here, but we had storms that were producing funnel clouds over near Sabina. I don't know if you saw that, but my daughter and I went out and chased that storm for a little bit. But you put it all together and we've got widespread 1 to 5 inches of rain around here. And it was cool and it came through at the right time. So what I'm trying to say is the forecast to Beryl was maybe more important for the markets, but in terms of the quality of the crop around here, the eventual rains that came through were mission critical.
What about this weekend? Will we stay mission critical or do things change?
It's going to get hot. Yeah, it's going to get hot and it's going to be stormy. So we still have the moisture. We're going to have isolated storms that just pop on the heat. But Western Corn Belt's going to easily get up above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. We're going to be well into the 90s. I'm heading out to St. Louis on Saturday to watch the Cards-Cub game. I told my family, like, it's going to be 95 when we get down there into St. Louis. So it's going to be very, very hot. But it doesn't last long. Like, we have a front that's going to start creeping in the northern plains by next Tuesday. It gets to us by Wednesday, Thursday, knocks the temperatures back into much more tolerable values. And with it, we get a front that comes through that might give us a chance at more storms. And most of the longer range models just want to anchor heat into the four corner states, into the west. And Todd, that's an ideal situation if you're in Illinois. The more we keep the heat over there, the less risk we have here of seeing sustained hot and dry conditions going forward.
You'll be in St. Louis. I'm going to Muncie, Indiana, where my youngest son, who had a birthday yesterday, happy birthday to Bradley, by the way, will be running a half Ironman. And
oh my.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look like it'll be terrible because they start so darn early in the morning. And sure. He's been training in Austin, Texas, so the heat might be easier
okay.
for him. So we'll see how that goes. In DVI, since you sure. mentioned what the crop looked like around here, what do we know about crop conditions?
Well, I went and looked first at the Northwest Corn Belt, so Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, South Dakota, and parts of Nebraska. The NDVI values there are right on their historical averages. You would be surprised, but given with all that rain that's been had, crop delays combined with some other factors like incredibly heavy rain, and then I'm sure you heard about the terrible hail that hit Nebraska and parts of Iowa, what was that, a little bit more than a week ago. My estimate is around 500,000 acres could have been negatively impacted to where the yield could be severely compromised in that area. So those NDVI values are low, but you come to the Eastern Corn Belt, and after Beryl's rain, we saw a pretty sizable jump, and now we're sitting close to the top of the distribution in terms of how healthy the crop looks from space, starting in Arkansas, going to Missouri, into Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and even including Ohio, and also Tennessee and Kentucky look pretty darn good on their western sides as well. So that means here we are. Some of the crops at Tassel, we're going to be watching for the beans to use this moisture later, hoping to get more in August. And, it looks pretty good at this point, Todd.
Longer range. We have talked about La Nina. Do we have any more news?
Well, La Nina's been just stalled. And even though we have some what we call easterly wind bursts coming across the equatorial Pacific, I don't expect we'll have any sort of atmospheric response in our jet stream to La Nina until we get into fall. But between now and then, the hurricane season will get going. So to be honest with you, it doesn't even matter if I was forecasting, you know, typical La Nina conditions for late summer. We could have a hurricane that could upset that in a week, just like Beryl did. And remember, most of the hurricane season's August, September, October. And I would not be surprised if the Gulf is the more active piece. Now, if La Nina becomes a major factor for winter, we tend to like La Nina winters in the Midwest. We tend to get good deep freezes, and we tend to have an active Ohio River Valley storm track. And one of the models, one we run at here in the United States, called the CFSV2, it's a NOAA model, it's going after full-bore La Nina, whereas the Europeans say, no, 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 keep this thing ENSO neutral all the way through winter. So there's going to be a lot of forecast discussion about what fall and winter look like. I'll give you this right now, though. Based on what I see today, I think we do have a drier harvest time period, and most likely we'll be able to get in and get stuff out relatively quickly once it's ready.
Is La Nina the one that has a larger impact on South America?
Well, it flip-flops in South America. If you're talking about La Nina, we're typically talking about good rains in northern Brazil, so like Mato Grosso early. And given that I believe, we need to back this up, but I believe they've been given permission to plant early this year. Have you heard that?
No, I have not seen that yet.
Yeah, I heard it. You know, a couple places petitioned for the early planting last year and they got it, that September 1 and says September 15. I heard that more states went after that and it was kind of just granted. I need to fact check myself on that. I just read it in one spot. But if there's a La Nina, we tend to see better early rains, which is really what determines when they plant, as if they've got the early monsoonal moisture. A year ago, they didn't have it, but this upcoming year they could, which means our attention will go back down to southern Brazil and Argentina if La Nina develops over the risk of being drier.
Black Sea area. Let's talk about wheat and corn.
Yeah, this kind of baffles me some because I know wheat is done, right? But the other summer crops that are grown in Ukraine and in Western Russia, we have got NDVI values there that are in the lowest they've been in the last 20 plus years. And every forecast just shows hot and dry. And there's only been limited storms that have been in that area. And I mean, it's huge. I'm talking about an area that's three times the size of Iowa. And so thinking about all of that, I'm surprised that it's not becoming more of a discussion, especially in market behavior. But it may be one of these things where all of a sudden we get a report out of Russia or we hear something about, you know, global grain shipments. And now it starts to show up that there were bigger problems in that area. And by the way, I know you didn't ask, but it's flooding in and around Beijing and like Shandong and these provinces that grow corn and beans near the North China Plain as well. So there's some international stuff going on that should it kind of reach a little bit more of a peak, it could be important for our markets going forward.
Oh, dang you for throwing stuff in. I mean, just dang. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk with you again next Friday.
Sounds good, Todd. Thanks.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason, my brother. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.